Have you ever heard of an organization that after those 6 months goes back saying, hey, let's see whether the business case actually is proven to be right? No one does that.
Hello and welcome to This Is HCD. Our goal is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organizations to become more human-centered in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. Now, if you like what we do at This Is HCD and want to help us, there's a few things you can do to just get started. Number one, you can leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast, and it only takes a couple of minutes, but it's one of the most important things you can do to show support. Number two, you can become a patron. You can get an ad-free stream of the podcast for as little as €1.66 per month, and also get a shout out as a thanks on the podcast as well. There's other plans where you can get exclusive items too, and all the money goes directly to editing, hosting and maintaining our website, which is now a repository for human-centered design goodness with over 220 episodes. In this episode, I chat with Marzia Arago, design director at Live Work in London and based in the stunning city of Rotterdam. And we chat about service measurement and some of the work that Marzia and her colleagues at Live Work have been doing to help move the dial forward for organizations in this space. It's a fantastic conversation and totally enjoyed connecting with Marzia. Let's jump straight in. Marzia Arago, I am delighted to have you here and welcome you to This Is HCD. Long-time admirer, first-time caller, as you'd say. But, you know, maybe to kick off, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
Hello, Jerry. I'm from Sicily.
Yeah.
The very south of Europe.
Yeah.
But I live in Rotterdam, the Netherlands.
Wonderful. And tell us, how would you describe what you do?
Well, I'm incredibly passionate about design. This is what I've been doing for my entire career.
Yeah.
I've been studying design, practicing design in very different forms. And at the moment, I'm design director at Live Work Studio in London.
Okay.
So what I do is, fundamentally working with clients, listening to challenges, coming up with, you know, ways to tackle those challenges that is somewhat future-proof and design-based, design-led. Yeah.
Before we were chatting, because I haven't actually spoken to too many people in Live Work over the years. I think I might have one or two. But, you know, how you framed Live Work to me was kind of a different and a very forward-thinking approach to retaining identity, I guess. Would you mind discussing that a little bit more around, you know, the size of the practice and, you know, how the practice runs? Because I think that could be really interesting for the listeners.
Yeah, sure. So we have three studios at the moment, London, Rotterdam and São Paulo. We have chosen to keep the studios quite small. The London studio is about 25 people, Rotterdam is about 30. São Paulo is a bit larger. Mm-hmm. And fundamentally, that is a choice that we made a few years ago when we decided not to be acquired by any management consulting firm or large bank or slash tech company slash, you know, you name it. Because we want to be able to work on the things that interest us. We want to be able to do it in a time frame that we deem reasonable. We don't want to end up in a machine that pressures you to just deliver a 20% growth a year at whatever cost. We are a bunch of nerds in love with design. Sure. We just want to make sure that we do projects that, you know, are meaningful for us, where we can see impact, and we want to be able to say no when we don't see that, when we don't see meaning, when we don't see the impact that we want to see in the world. And if you become bigger than that size that I mentioned, that it becomes hard to do that because you have to start taking whatever project comes to pay basically salaries, right?
Absolutely.
So we tend to select our people quite carefully and to keep the team small and cohesive around our purpose, basically.
Absolutely. It sounds like it sounds idyllic in many ways, because we've obviously, we're all probably aware, many of the listeners are aware of the agencies that have kind of come and gone and have been absorbed by big organizations. And, you know, after a couple of years, they just dissolve and they become part of the bigger beast or the bigger fish. So it's really rewarding to see that kind of fight happening, and that fight to retain identity is super. positive. So I know, look, I'm a big fan of Live Work, and I've been following Live Work for as long as I've been involved in service design. But today we're going to be chatting a little bit more around service measurement and service performance, something that we connected about recently, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago. We were back and forth about it. But you and a number of other peers in Live Work have developed a new framework. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Do you have a name for it?
No.
You haven't given a
measurement
name?
Measurement framework. Is that what
you
call it?
You could call it new measurement framework.
Yeah, we could do that.
NMF. NMF, which is quite similar to NPS, but NMF. So the new measurement framework, which you've just witnessed the naming of the new LiveWork measurement framework. It's called NMF. Highly contentious because it's NMF, new measurement framework. But how does this separate itself, and how does this distinguish itself against other how should we say, metrics that are being used in organizations to measure services?
We have taken an outside-in service-led perspective to this. A lot of, in our experience in the past, I don't know, 10 to 15 years, a lot of organizations have came to us saying, hey, we have this objective, we want to be number one NPS cross-sector. And my answer is usually, to what end? Because that is not in itself an outcome to achieve, and an extreme focus on NPS, as you know, and NPS in itself is not a bad thing, but you know, the way it has been using to really drive behavior in organizations and strategy is not necessarily healthy. So what we have started doing is really engaging our clients in a conversation about outcomes. What are the outcomes that you're really trying to achieve as a business? You know, what are you here to do? And it's not just a question about business, but also, you know, what are you trying to achieve for your customers and for operations? And most recently, we also added sustainability as a fourth lens. And okay. So forcing that discussion about outcomes and not metrics has been proven for us and for our clients a very illuminating one, refreshing one, because you really start using a language and a level of conversation that engages multiple stakeholders from different perspectives and really aligns around the thing that you're there to do.
Yeah.
And we try to anchor that to a life cycle view, so an end-to-end view of what customers are trying to achieve.
Okay. So for any established service designers out there, they're probably bobbing along kind of saying, yeah, This is kind of what we've been talking about for a long time, having the life cycle view and have an outcome at the end of it that's measurable. Do you mind if you take a step back though and talk a little bit more around NPS? And because I feel like if we're driving along a road here and we've just passed, you know, this big building called NPS that the world has been in love with, and many of the organizations have been in love with, we should stop at least and take a photograph of what that looks like. So maybe let's talk about why do you believe organizations love NPS, and what does it give them, as opposed to a score at the end of it, in terms of an emotional piece? What is attractive about NPS to organizations?
Originally, NPS, the Net Promoter Score, was invented as a way to measure how well organizations generates relationships that are worthy of loyalty, right? So it's a prediction for loyalty, and fundamentally it will tell you how much you can expect to sell more of that things, how many new customers we'll have, as well as how likely the customer is to stay with you, which in itself is a very useful thing, I think. And it's very simple, it's one question, incredibly simple, right?
Yeah,
it's not a lengthy, complicated survey, so in its simplicity, it's great. And it's something that everyone understands, and it's become a real driver for conversations and decision making.
Yeah, but it's like the way I describe NPS is like calories. Calories on food. It's you could have an apple that's 50 calories, or you could have a spoon of peanut butter that's also 50 calories.
but like there's different nutrients and there's different perspectives and there's different micronutrients as part of each one of those food types. And am I right in saying, like, and I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here because I know the answer already to this, but NPS gives an organization a level of reassurance that they can compare, you know, historically, okay, things are getting better. Things are getting worse. Is that really as simple as a view that organizations are using NPS in terms of like, are we doing better? Are we doing worse?
Yeah, are we doing better? Are we doing worse? Sure, they use it for that, but fundamentally, and you know, for projections of revenue. But fundamentally, the problem with that is that you don't have any understanding about the actual experience that you're offering to customers. And if things are going bad, if your NPS goes down, you have no clue why.
Why exactly? So I've seen some arguments about this online where, you know, service design might be a new thing in your organization, and product management or whoever's installed or instilled NPS as a metric worth measuring in an organization. And they don't have the power to change it, and they kind of have to live with it and pick their battles. And one argument was to add an extra field where it's an open-ended field and you can ask for some additional insights.
Yeah, some people are doing that. Or they do callbacks, right?
They do callbacks and stuff like that to add a little bit more meat to the score. Is there anything else in your framework that you could sort of see, or in your experience, not even your NMF? We'll get to that now in a minute, the NMF, because I know people are on the edge of their seats waiting to hear
this. It's
going to
become a thing.
It's going to stick. I can feel it.
It's going to stick forever.
I just want a little credit. That's all I want to take. But with that, with NPS, okay, if you have something like you want to add to that conversation about an open-ended field at the end of your NPS survey, is there anything else that you can advise to people that they might be able to add to make it somewhat of a better transition, maybe to have those conversations with the business about saying, hey, listen. No.
I don't have an answer to that. Like, I don't even want to give an answer to that because I think it's just the whole concept is just so fundamentally broken.
We're not going to get down that road, folks. If you want to get down that road, folks, you can listen to an episode of myself and Nick Koster from 2018 where we destroyed NPS. Anyway, well, actually, I destroyed NPS. Nick defended NPS in that conversation a couple of years ago. But let's talk about the NMF, which, again, folks, it's sticking. So you said, you know, the full life cycle of measuring the outcome. Maybe talk to me about how you would sell this into an organization about you've got a new measurement framework. How is it different?
I mean, I usually start the conversation by asking in what way do they make decisions about where to invest money. Like, how do you decide that onboarding is a more valuable thing to invest into than something else?
Yeah.
On the basis of what?
Yeah.
And usually, well, there is no answer to that because there is no process. And usually the reality is that some senior leader woke up, heard a client complaining about X or someone complaining about X, and then getting all very worried about the thing and started shouting that this thing needs to be fixed.
Why can't you do
it? And all of a sudden, there are these, you know, millions moving one side to the other to fix that thing on the base of non-existing business cases or business cases that are written on the base of, you know, pure imagination. Gosh. And then those business cases are never even reviewed again. So after you have written the business case, got the money to actually start the project, have you ever heard of an organization that after those 6 months goes back saying, hey, let's see whether the business case actually is proven to be right?
Yeah.
No one does that.
No.
Right?
And it is crazy when you say that.
It is crazy. Yeah. It is crazy. So my question usually is, how do you make informed decisions? How can you decide that this thing is more valuable than this other one? Mm-hmm. And the second question that I usually ask is, do you know how much revenue this specific service brings and how much it costs to deliver it?
Yeah.
Usually the answer is no, because organizations are not organized like that. They're organized around products. They can tell you that about a product.
But they cannot tell you that about a service. Tell you that, though. Marzia?
About a product. About a product, yes. About a service that is a bit more difficult because there is no service owner, is it? There is a product owner.
But a product is a service, isn't it?
I don't agree with that.
You don't agree with it?
No. Why do you say that?
It's a conversation for another episode, I think, because we could easily go down that road. There's two schools of thought on it, but we're going to keep that one for a second episode. I think there's enough here to talk about a second episode. So your argument is that a product is a product and a service is a service.
A product serves a service and a service is served by multiple products.
Yeah.
So a product can be a service in itself. Fine. I mean, in this micro world, but fundamentally, if you have a service view of what you are delivering as an organization, a service will be supported by multiple products.
Yeah, so okay. We're saying the same thing. We are saying the same thing. Okay. We are saying the same thing.
So we don't need a second episode.
We don't need a second episode.
Okay. So that's usually my starting point. Starting point is, how do you make decisions and do you know how much money your service generates and how much money costs to deliver it?
Absolutely.
So usually the answer is no to all of those things.
Yeah.
So then my follow-up is, let me show you something. And then that something is usually
a briefcase with NMF.
It's usually a service architecture. So I'm not even going to measurements yet. I'm going into the land of, let's draw a map of the services that you offer as an organization. Because in 15 years I've been working in this specific field, I've never seen an organization that has a list of the services they offer to their customers. What are these services and how they connect to each other and what are the journeys that support those services? Do you have that in one picture?
Yeah.
Do you know what are the products that actually are supporting those services in one picture? That one picture usually doesn't exist. They usually have journeys, right? They have journeys, which I, for me in my head, is a level one, right? But the picture that I'm talking about is higher than that. It's a level zero. It's like a higher level of abstraction.
Yeah, a zoomed out perspective.
So we usually start building that picture of the architecture of the services that an organization delivers. And then on the base of that, then we start saying, okay, can we just on the base of this start reflecting on what are the outcomes that you're trying to achieve?
Yeah.
That usually takes quite a long time and quite a lot of alignment, because different people in different pockets will have a very different view of it. So you will start with a list of probably 20. Mm. And my usual approach is to really push them to reduce that to a maximum total of 9. So what are the actual top 3 from a customer perspective, from a business organization perspective, and an operational perspective? The top 3 outcomes that you're trying to achieve. What is your focus? Where is the energy of the organization? Then for sure there will be others, but you know, can we just focus on the most important things right now? And once we have agreed that and we have aligned around it, then we start looking for signals. What are the signals that can tell you whether you're reaching those outcomes or not? And it doesn't have to be a metric yet. It could be like an indicator. What is an indicator that can tell you whether you're achieving that outcome or not? And then on the base of that, we start picking specific metrics. And that one of these metrics could be very well NPS, depending on the outcome that you're trying to achieve. But then you need to understand what that thing is linked to.
Hmm.
Right? And that link usually doesn't exist.
Could it be linked to OKRs, presumably, yeah.
Could be linked to a million other things.
Okay.
And so if it's a metric that they are already measuring, great. If it doesn't exist, we start measuring it.
Yeah. So you're agnostic to the method of measurement, really, in the new measurement framework. You are agnostic to whatever measurement tool.
Yeah.
So it's
as long as it's clear what it's
as long as it's clear and flexible. And I mean, the most likely operational metrics that you're seeing being measured, apart from, you know, cost, reduction, tell me what you're seeing there from an organizational perspective on the organizations that you've tested this with.
From an operations perspective?
Yeah, from an operational perspective. What are the things
that resolution times, you know, headcount, right? Those are...
The exciting ones.
The exciting ones.
I remember I was only recounting to a friend who was over for lunch on Friday. Years and years ago, I went to, when I came home from Australia, actually, I had an interview in a consultancy, not going to be named. And I sat down and they're like, okay, so service design, talk to us, Jerry. And I go, okay, how would you make 12,000 people redundant with service design?
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And I went, okay, well, before we get into that conversation, I want to define service design because I think there might be a misalignment on understanding here, I said. So, and they were like,
but actually, there is a way to go about it because, to be honest with you, I mean, okay, fine, the horror. But the reality is that through the service design work, a lot of the time, we really managed to uncover real efficiencies, right?
Yeah.
Duplication of work. People doing the same projects into different. I mean, even the same role, and people don't even know, right? I know what the problem is, but actually, the question.
Over the years, I've really processed that question. I can say, where did it come from? So, I think there was probably a little bit of a rationale to it, but the effort to get to that point was far too greater than me wanting to go down that road, to be honest, at the time.
But my answer would have been, to what end, right? I mean, I think that is the interesting thing. To what end do you want to do that? What is the thing that you're trying to achieve here? Which is usually
exactly
question that I ask when, you know, at the beginning of any, you know, they come with all of this reduction of 15% of personnel or number one NPS. To what end? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean,
what are you here to do? What do you want to do?
Unfortunately,
because that is already a solution, right? Reduction of personnel, of employees, it's already a solution in itself. So you're coming with a solution.
Yeah, their perspective was selling efficiency. And, you know, reducing headcount was one way to do this and leveraging technology. And it goes back to the lib work, you know, retaining their identity and taking on the work that they want to do. I was like at a huge, it was a juxtaposition on how I was seeing design at that time. I was like, well, that's not how I see it. You know, I want to see it like this. But we deviate a little bit more, like, you know, so I want to focus more on the new management framework or new measurement framework. You can see
called
NMF, which I'm really starting to like, folks. I've just bought the domain newmeasurementframework.com. Joking. So for an organization that's, say, low mature, okay, because if they're so rigid and they're using NPS as their golden egg, you know, it's the thing that's giving them whatever they want. Because they can interpret the data in whatever way they look at it. They can, and they're maybe not mature enough to be able to push a design kind of approach to solving this. What skills do they need, or what personnel do they need, in your experience, to kind of move the conversation forward to question that and start introducing the NMF? I mean, because that's the big thing. There's people listening here and they say, well, my organization would never.
Yeah.
And that's the conversation in design that I'm really interested about, because, you know, what you measure is a direct indicator of how you value the customer relationship and the customer experience. And too often we're too stuck in the weeds and we're just fixing buttons and we're not looking at the actual structural thing of the ecosystem. And there, that's where we need to have the conversations up there and really providing the visibility of how everything is hanging together and, you know, how much it's costing and what's it giving us and why we're doing these things and decision-making frameworks and these kind of pieces. Like, you know, but what do you say to those people who are in that situation? They're in that boat at the moment and they've got, you know, an old schooled person who's still looking at the NPS score, smiling every month.
Yeah, I wouldn't really focus on the NPS and not start from there. I mean, I think the very measurement conversation, and this is where I was trying to get to my story, where do you start? It will come when the moment is right, but I wouldn't start from that. I wouldn't start a conversation from NPS. Let's change NPS, because everyone... No one would listen. Why would they?
No. because you're all told them they're stupid. You're effectively saying you're all stupid. And
you know, you read McKinsey, you will learn that half of the FTSE 500 probably is even more than that. They're all using it. So why not? It's a best practice.
Yeah. And they can point at that and you can't.
So it's not a battle that you can fight, not at that stage, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a question of creating a trajectory towards that moment.
Another conversation, a separate conversation.
Yeah. It's literally a trajectory that requires, you know, what are the things that need to be true in order for me to have the conversation?
Hmm.
And also, you know, you can start small. I said, you know, start service architecture, higher level of abstraction, but you can do exactly the same thing at a journey level, at a way lower level of abstraction, and start really proving how, in a very smaller scale, how something like this could work out. Absolutely. While the organization, you know, because the reality is that a lot of these people, like designers, CX practitioners, you know, they try to re-engineer the plane while it's on flight, you know?
Mm.
And that's a very hard job to do. And you cannot do it all at once.
Yeah.
Because you're going to crash. You know? So you have to do it in pockets.
It sounds in some ways, and I mean this in a compliment, because, you know, Mark Stickthorne has a framework called Journey Map Operations, where it looks at the various levels of Zoom and how they're interconnected, and you've got the sub-journeys and stuff like that. And it's a management framework. It sounds like yours is a step after that, and like Journey Map Operations is a fantastic way to get that visibility. Mm-hmm. And then the NMF could come in after that, and again, get
but I also love the movement of your head when you say
well,
that.
I'm trying
it's
to
like
sell
this
it.
Cool.
I'm trying to really get it in there, like as if it's, you know, wedging itself into the conversation. So the NMF is something that comes after that, like, because if anyone hasn't seen Mark Stickthorne's Journey Map Operations, you know, do check it out. You know, it's a great course, but it's also a really solid foundational principle way of looking at services in terms of at the various Zoom levels, because people get nosebleeds when they get at Zoom level one or Zoom level two and they're like, wow, okay, this is amazing. But I think this agnostic approach could be something that is really interesting to people who've maybe taken that course, who have seen Mark's Journey Map Operations framework. And it could be a really nice thing to introduce. So like maybe after this conversation, I'll connect both of you to continue this conversation.
Nice, yeah.
But I think overall, if people want to read more of or find out more about NMF, how might they do it, Marzia?
Well, LiveWork website, we have a
LiveWork,
few
articles. It's up there. It's up on the blog, is it? The LiveWork blog.
Yes, there are a few articles on it on the website. Or just send me a...
Yeah,
I'm on LinkedIn.
You're on LinkedIn. So your LinkedIn will be in the show notes.
Okay.
And people can connect with you directly.
And connect with me directly.
And I'm sure all our listeners are probably kind of nodding along saying, I'd like to hear more of Marzia. So maybe we'll have another chat at another point about other topics, because I've thoroughly enjoyed you giving me your energy and your insight and your openness about all things service measurement. So thanks so much for your time today, Marzia.
Well, thank you. It was real fun.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishcd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.